Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how the devil are you today?
How do you like me now, Chris Broad? What a terrible start to a show. It's a Sunday. For the very first time in the longest time, I think this is the first time we've like recorded a show on the day it actually goes out. Is that fair
what
to say?
It's Sunday today.
You don't know where you are, do you, Chris? You have spent the last few hours down in mine picking up as many bits of rock as you possibly can. Incredible work.
Yes, I've been down in a mine filming a video. I got my 8K camera finally, and I thought it's time to use it, time to put it to good use. And where I live, there's like an abandoned mining town that I've always wanted to visit but didn't know what to do with the town. So I got the camera and I got my friend Quinlan from Go North Japan. You might have heard of him or not, but he goes around mountains filming himself climbing mountains, and I enlisted him to be my model. And so we walked around the mines, and he knows them quite well because he always goes there, and he sort of escorted me around, and I made this sort of like cinematic video of him exploring the mines like a sort of Indiana Jones figure. It was quite fun. There was a lot of rain, though. It was very damp, and there was a lot of asbestos, like a lot of asbestos.
Oh. What was the asbestos doing down there? Just a lot of signs saying, don't come in here, there's asbestos.
Well, you could see it, like, because the mining town was built in, like, the, I think, 1950s or something. Right. Like, you can see all this, like, fluffy, rather dodgy-looking material that definitely was asbestos. Chris. And it used to be quite popular as a material, right?
It did, yeah. It used to be like, we used to not have snow in Britain. We used to have asbestos. We used to throw asbestos balls at each other. It was really fun.
It was a simpler time, a better time.
It was a simpler time, yeah.
But it was fun. But it was quite daunting because just yesterday there was the magnitude 7 earthquake, another one. There's so many bloody earthquakes at the moment. And so probably not a good idea to go to a dilapidated, abandoned town where the whole buildings were falling down. Just 24 hours after a relatively large earthquake.
You didn't go into any of the mines themselves, though, did you? You didn't actually go clambering within the collapsed mines.
I'm not as bold as you, Pete. I'm not as bold as you. I didn't go into the mines. But to be fair, the buildings are pretty dicey because they're up on a mountain about 1,000 metres high, and the snow there is about 10 to 15 metres. So at one point we were clambering over the snow, and then I think my entire foot up to my waist, I went like into the snow, and it was really quite scary. And more worryingly, the area doesn't have any phone signal, which was pretty daunting. Like, it was really
like Quinlan's led you astray, Chris. This is like the start of like an episode of ER or Casualty to the British listeners.
It sounds like something rather sinister.
Some
Casualty or ER.
They always say, like, you know, you shouldn't be playing in mines, you shouldn't be playing in quarries, and you're doing both, just hanging out after an earthquake in the snow. Awful business.
but in 8K, Pete, in glorious 8K.
Exactly. Honestly, you buy yourself a new 8K camera and you're really pleased about it. You're really pleased with yourself, et cetera, et cetera. Yada, yada, yada. Yodobashi Camera's seen another one come in and they've palmed off for that. And you've, and then suddenly you are taking it to one of the most difficult, dustiest, snowiest possible places you could go to. You're going to break the camera, Chris. Be careful.
I nearly did at one point because I stuck it on a gimbal, right? And I bloody hate gimbals. But if you need like a kind of a cinematic look to it, you need to put a camera on a gimbal. And right. At one point, like, it nearly just fell off and smashed this brand new camera. But it's still intact. The good news is it's still intact. It's a nice camera. It looks great. But I've noticed the difference between 4K and 8K, you can't see it. Like, there's no difference. You can't see the difference. No, so really, why did I get it? I don't know what I was thinking. I guess the only good thing I got it for is with the upcoming series of Journey Across Japan, because there's Joey and Natsuki and myself in the frame at any one time.
Yeah.
We can kind of like have the camera on a wide angle and then punch into our faces if we need to as a close-up and just use the same camera, right? Just zoom in digitally. Mm. So that's why I bought it, and to film a mine. But yeah, that video, I mean, it'll be good. And it's coming out soon.
Does that just not make your whole workflow take 10 times as long, or twice as long, in fact, than your 4K? It just takes longer to get all of the files off the disks and stuff.
The file size isn't too bad, but yeah, the processing 8K, the whole computer just sort of suddenly sounds like a Boeing 747. It's like,
let's talk codecs, Chris. What's your codec of choice when it comes to 8K? Are you a ProRes LT 422?
No,
what are we talking?
H.265.
H.265.
ProRes. What do you think I am? It's not a film. It's not a film. But yeah, no, it should be good. It's coming out soon. You got that to look forward to. And thank you to all of you guys for asking if I was okay after the earthquake. All is well. It wasn't as bad as the one last month, thankfully. But again, it was really close to Onigawa, where we went, the abandoned town, the town which got destroyed by the tsunami. It's always in that neck of the woods.
Yeah,
it's really quite
weird,
chilling,
isn't it? There must be some kind of weird fault in that part of the ground, of the terra firma. But the I was enjoying. I finally got round to watching the Joey the Anime Man and the rest of that rabble. Their drifting videos. I'd not seen that. You see, they're about Trash Taste Podcast Live when they go and do drifting. You are obviously helping them film, and at certain points you can be spotted in the background of cars going, oh, I'm going to be sick. you looked very pleased to be not that involved in that particular project, only as a cameraman. Very enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, I think their producer, Maylene, was really kindly offered to let me do it, to go drifting, but I was like, no, I don't want to do it. I would have been the best, because I think I've driven more than all of them, because I drive a lot, and I love driving when I'm not getting pulled over or fined for speeding. And yeah, I love driving manual as well. Yeah, right, I love it. I love manual. But I figured I'd let them get on with it. Three's already a lot. Four's a crowd, and it was a lot more fun. Like flying the drone. They raced towards the drone, and I moved out of the way, and I was trying not to crash the drone. But it's a lot of fun. Yeah, working on the Trash Taste Drift special. It was good.
Cracking.
And actually, sadly, the Ebisu Circuit where they filmed that and where I filmed my drift video with Ryotaro a year ago, there was a landslide there recently, and the whole place has to be shut for a year. Like millions of like tons of rocks just spilled out across the racetrack and destroyed a few buildings. So
it looks like it's on the side of a mountain, doesn't it? Because obviously, because it looks like if you took one of the corners at speed and didn't really correct your steering, you'd be just over the horizon. You'd be never seen again.
Abroad in a body bag, by all accounts.
Yeah.
You've got to be careful there. And I don't know, this landslide, there was a lot of rain and like a mountain just collapsed onto Ebisu Circuit, unfortunately.
Oh,
so apparently it's not going to be open for the rest of the year. So hopefully they can fix that and excavate the racetrack, because it is an amazing place, really quite an amazing place. We got a story this week. Rob from Munich says, hello, Chris and Pete. 4 years ago, I went to Japan on a work and travel visa. My first job was in a small hostel in downtown Hiroshima, not far from the Peace Memorial Park. Hiroshima was an incredible place to live, and working with travellers from all around the world was an absolute blast. And yet I soon started to feel lonely and somewhat taken advantage of, because there were never more than one employee on shift. The work was exhausting and the pay was really bad. The only locals I managed to befriend were a couple of office workers who visited the hostel every now and then to practice speaking English with the guests. When I eventually confided to that lovely group of dapper salarymen that I considered leaving the hostel because I felt kind of exploited, one of them, who sold high-end ovens, tried to cheer me up with a story that has stuck with me ever since. He explained that everybody in Japan feels exploited. Nobody ever feels like they truly get exactly what they deserve. So whenever he feels depressed, he took solace in the undisputed knowledge that life sucks for everyone. A wave of sorrowful nodding went through the room, and his heartfelt pep talk was concluded. His deeply disturbing speech failed to make me feel any better at the time, but it surely gave me a lot to think about. Acknowledging the equalizing pain of existence did in fact help me connect with a few more people later on who were pleasantly surprised by that level of understanding from a foreigner. It didn't work on everyone, but when it worked, it worked. Now, did I just happen to meet a bunch of woeful weirdos, or is this way of thinking an actual common thing in Japan? Have you ever come across this unsettling reasoning? Is Japan truly being held together by the thought that your pain is meaningless because everybody suffers equally and no one gets to be happy? To end on a high note, I did cheer up soon after and continued having an amazing time in Japan that I'll always hold dear to my heart. My dream is to return one day and cycle across the Shimonami Kaido in the Inland Sea. But for now, guys, sincerely, all the best. Rob from Munich. Oh, dear. Oh, what do we make of that? Pete,
that was
weirdos or philosophers?
What a heartbreaking story. Yeah, you sort of like, I guess, I mean, we've spoken before about how, no, you know, work is a very unique, it's performed in a very unique way in Japan, in that people just work ridiculously long hours and are underpaid and are quite miserable. But this is just like, it's like a JRPG, like a side character just sort of going, yeah, I'm really depressed. Like, you know, you sort of meet those guys on video games and they're like, having a terrible time, and you try and cheer them up by, you know, performing a quest for them. It just sounds like a whole room of them, of these kind of side quest people. Oh dear, that's so sad.
I mean, I don't know how I feel about taking powerful life philosophy from a man who sells high-end ovens for a living. I mean, I love an oven as much as the next person, but I feel like if you're in a career you don't enjoy, get another one. Start doing the kind of the
not
process.
As easy as that, though, is it?
It's not easy.
It's just that.
It's not as
people
easy.
People have responsibilities.
But you can start making that kind of career change over a period of years, right? You don't just wake up and be like, I'm going to be an astronaut. I'm going to be a lawyer. You know, it takes time to get there. I mean, I used to work in an office, which I hated, and people there were like just expected to just live there and work there for 40 years, retire, and then die. And I was like, there's got to be more than this, guys. And they used to laugh at me when I would like take out my, I'd go and sit in my car on lunch break and read books about business and filmmaking. They'd be like, nonsense, get back in those Excel spreadsheets. So I don't know. I feel like you can change your career. I know it's more difficult in Japan, though. It is more difficult. And I have had this chat with Natsuki. I don't know if everybody feels miserable. Like Ryotaro loves what he does. And my good friend Yuki loves what he does. Natsuki doesn't.
But they've got very unique jobs, haven't they? Yuki and Yuki and Ryotaro, they've got very unique jobs. Natsuki runs his own business. He's tethered to one particular place, and he's the, you know, the last. He's the one-stop shop for everyone, isn't he? Like, if something goes wrong, it's down to him, effectively, isn't it?
The one-stop shop for everyone.
The one-stop shop for everyone. Yeah, he's like, everyone looks to Natsuki when things go wrong in the shop, and he's got all that responsibility, the weight of responsibility, the weight of the family.
Oh. I mean, I don't know. He does. I don't know that he does have that much responsibility. What I do know is he doesn't. He's not very happy with his life. It gets very repetitive, and he's always trying to find ways out of it, which is why he sells his bizarrely branded shampoo and hand spray. I don't know. I think a lot of people in Japan have that mindset of this is the way it is, and there's not much I can do about it. Like entrepreneurship. Is still in its early stages here compared to like the US, you know, where people are much more willing to try and fail, and even in the UK. But I think in Japan, people are just, there's a lot of pressure to do those things, which is a shame.
And also, like, good ideas just don't happen quickly, I suppose. Good ideas aren't received gladly by people. If you have an idea in your business, the satisfaction in a job is always kind of, you know, doing something differently or coming up with a solution to a problem that's existed for ages or a problem that people didn't really identify at the time. But the problem with Japanese businesses frequently, from what I've been hearing, is that people will do anything not to do something different. They will just have a million meetings about possibly changing the situation to benefit themselves, and then just go back to the way it's always been done, because that's just the way it's always been done, and it's easier to sort of say no to something than it is to say yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's why I always say to like friends coming to live and work in Japan, be very careful where you work, you know, try and find either a job run by a foreign company or by a kind, understanding Japanese person, you know, who doesn't go by the old way of doing things. He's a bit more progressive, shall we say. Speaking of good ideas, I'll tell you what isn't a good idea. What the Tokyo Olympic official this week did or offered forward as an idea for the Olympics. There's a bit of a scandal this week, again about the Olympics. I swear every week there's a scandal about the Olympics because someone, some 60 to 70-year-old man who's probably shouldn't be doing what he's doing, is running the Olympics into the ground with some stupid comments. And what do we have? A few weeks ago, the head of the Olympics
said women shouldn't, women shouldn't be on the board because it takes too long to have a conversation with them, etc., etc.
That's right. The guy, he said women are rubbish and they should be seen, not heard, basically. I've got another one this week. Another powerful Tokyo Olympic official has lost his job after I don't even really understand what this scandal is, because it's so ridiculous. I thought it was like an April Fool's, right? One of Japan's biggest celebrities is Naomi Watanabe. She's a comedian. She has all sorts of stuff. She's pretty funny, but she's sort of a plus-size model. And that's where the problem lies here, because Sasaki Hiroshi, one of the creative director of the Tokyo Olympic Games, suggested at a meeting that Naomi Watanabe should be dressed up as an Olympic, and she should wear the ears of a pig and be dangled from a ceiling or something, or just be shown at the opening Olympic ceremony as a pig. And I don't really understand. Was that a flippant remark he made that he thought everyone would just go, oh, yeah? Or was it actually a serious suggestion to dress up one of Japan's biggest celebrities as a pig? I don't know, but he's lost his job, and it's another nail in the coffin for the bloody Tokyo Olympics. Like, this is the problem. If the coronavirus had never happened, right, and the Olympics had gone ahead last year, half of these scandals wouldn't have happened, because they wouldn't have had an extra year for all these officials to keep fucking up with stupid comments. Like, I'm losing my patience with it all.
For a country with no white men in it, they do a very good impression of all white men, don't they? The people who are in charge of Japan. They're just very old, stinky white men kind of opinions and jokes.
It's much worse than that. It's much worse. Because they got the whole kind of misogynistic component thrown in there.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Well, that's what all white men do. They're misogynistic.
How dare you?
They're
I'm not misogynistic. Extremely... I'm a lovely young man.
You're a young man, that's why. But yeah, it's just ridiculous. I think in that particular, was it a WhatsApp group or something, or a Discord or something, rather than a conversation, and he tapped out that little gag, thinking he was going to get some guffaws. But to the credit of the room, they told him to fuck off.
It's a Nigel Farage style joke, isn't it?
Interesting. So it will, but apparently. Apparently, the Tokyo Olympics are going to take place, but there will be no international guests, no international viewers of it, which is quite sad.
And that is that's another big news story this week. No foreigners are allowed to come and see the Olympics, which is sad. I mean, for me, I've just kind of assumed they weren't going to happen, so I'm surprised this sort of zombified Olympic ceremony is now going to happen. I don't think I've met a single Japanese person in the last 12 months who said, yeah, let's have the Olympics. None of them want it. None of them care. It's dead. Yeah. Like the whole point of the Olympics is it's about, you know, getting people over here to come and see Japan, experience how great the country is and whatnot. And that's not happening now. And
that's why people want the bid. That's why people make the bid, isn't it? To host World Cups and Olympics, because it makes them a hell of a lot of money. I mean, the idea that they wouldn't delay it further to allow people in, it seems, especially because nowadays you do have kind of rapid, you do have tests, you do have like rapid tests you can do, and they're pretty good at kind of spotting this and that. I mean, obviously you've got the variant variable as well, but it just seems like if they'd moved it possibly later this year or earlier next year, they could have had one where everybody attends. I mean, I don't know whether they're going to be just allowing Japanese people in, but that would seem like a slight unfair advantage for the Japanese competitors, no?
I feel like they should just move all the Olympics back. I don't know where the next one is. I feel it's in France. I'm not sure, but they should just like shift all the Olympics back 4 years, whatever,
yeah,
and let Japan still have it. Because Japan spends so much money on infrastructure and hotels and roads and whatnot. And the only good thing to come out of all this is since Japan won the Olympic bid and whatnot to now, you know, over the last 8 years, the whole time I've been here, I moved here literally the year that they won the bid. The country's seen a lot of changes, a lot of good changes for tourists in particular. There's a lot more English everywhere, so you can get around, and it's a lot more easy to travel around the country as a foreign tourist. So that's great. So that's something good to come out of it. But yeah, I still feel it's quite unfair that after all this, it's just going to be this zombified, not overly great games. I don't know. Maybe it will be good. Maybe it will be wonderful, unless someone else on the Olympic Committee says something stupid, racist. TikTok.
Still time.
There's still time for another hammer, another nail to be hammered into the coffin of the Tokyo Olympics. But Naomi Watanabe did come back and sort of say, I'm really confused. I don't understand what this is all about. This is the first I've heard about it. I wish people would be more accepting of us as individuals or something along those lines. So she didn't seem to be angry, just a bit disappointed and mostly confused, to be honest. So from what I understand, she's moving to New York this year. So hopefully she won't have to put up with folks like Hiroshi Sasaki anymore going forward. But Olympic. Oh, God. All right. And another news story this week is for travelers entering Japan, you now have to install 3 apps on your smartphone before leaving the airport. You've got the app of the Ministry of Health, Labour and Welfare, the COVID-19 contact tracing app. You've got to install Skype, and you've got to install the OSSMA location confirmation app. So 3 apps there. I think you've got Skype on there because they need to call you, right? They'll often need to call you up and check that you're in quarantine because there is a 14-day quarantine period.
What if you like having a sleep? Oh, lordy.
Well, not everyone sleeps through their phone calls, Pete. I know you might. But like a lot of people, I think I've heard of people like, because obviously your phone can be tracked. A lot of people go to the hotel, just leave their phone there and whatnot, and then just walk off and break the quarantine. I've heard that happening. So that's why you need Skype on there just to ring them up. But it's a little bit inconvenient. And rather worryingly, if you don't have a phone that is good enough for all 3 of these apps, and I don't know if such a phone exists unless you're using a Nokia 3310 or something, you've got to actually acquire or rent a smartphone that can have these 3 apps on before you're allowed to sort of venture off around Japan. But it seems like a weird thing given that no one's allowed into Japan at the moment. So I don't know how long this is going to happen or how long it's going to go on for. And it seems redundant given that a lot of people are going to have vaccines soon.
It just seems like, so this isn't for holiday makers or tourists because, you know, no one's going to fly in to have 2 weeks in quarantine and then, you know, another week somewhere else and then leave. So that's going to be a weird situation. Yeah, it just sounds like people who are meant to be are just returning from work abroad or something, I suppose. Mm. But it just, again, by the time this all kind of shakes out, you imagine that the vaccines will be in for a lot of countries, certainly developed nations anyway. So it's going to be interesting.
You've had yours now, right? You finally got your vaccine?
I had mine because I was whinging about, like, because I thought I'd get mine because of my asthma. But last Thursday, they because I get regular, steroid stuff morning and night for my asthma. It's pretty heavy duty asthma. But I just got a text saying, do you want to go and get your COVID? I was like, yes, brilliant. ran down and I had to go to Westminster Abbey.
Really?
I hadn't changed my doctors from Soho. Now I live out in the sticks. I was like, oh, crap, I'm going to have to go to, I think it was either like a cricket club or Westminster Abbey. And I was like, let's do Westminster Abbey. That's pretty money for my money. So I made a joke off air, the Nescafe Azera vaccine. It was very good, very affordable. I had the AstraZeneca and I was surprised that my body mounted some sort of fight back. Felt a little shaky, a little bit rough the next day. So it's a really? Bit like a hangover, a little bit like a nasty hangover, but feel fine now. But yeah, I was surprised how much my body reacted. I think as you get older, it reacts to vaccines less because your immune system isn't quite as powerful. But luckily for me, I think that my immune system is still doing something at 39. So, it really did kick the shit out of me for about a day. So
that's a little bit worrying because all my family have had the vaccine and they've not had anything like that. And they're considerably older.
A bit older, yeah. Yeah, well, exactly. So if they're a bit older, your immune system. That's why I guess the whole thing is more dangerous to people like that because their immune system can't fight it off. So, yeah. Weird.
Fair point, yeah. Weird. Fair point. Well, at least you got it. At least, hopefully, when the door's open, you could be at the front of the queue, right? To get down the mine shaft.
My left
get down
arm.
The mine shaft.
Get down that mine. You know me, I love an abandoned building, Chris.
In
big
8K.
Fan of that. Big fan of that. PD on the 8K.
We'll make it happen. we're going to turn to the fax machine in a moment. First, a quick break.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
This week at Sukarnov.
Over on My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson, comedy legend Ian Stone is choosing what he'd put on his list of personal wonders of the world. Along the way, he tells a story of the first time he ever did stand-up, and it wasn't exactly by choice.
My friends, who unbelievably remained my friends after this, put me down secretly for the open mic spot. I mean, I went on, I didn't know what to say. I stood there. I'd never been on a stage before. Well, actually, I'd done a school play once, but I was playing, I was some biblical thing. I can't even remember, but
You went into your I Am Joseph, is there room in your inn routine.
Give me my coloured coat. Yeah, that didn't work.
Meanwhile, these self-care club ladies are keen to figure out why so many women often find themselves saying sorry for just about anything.
I think that it is such a fine line between over-apologising unnecessarily and actually standing up and saying, I'm sorry for this. I'm sorry if you've been uncomfortable in any way that's been caused by me. And I think that's a sign of strength, isn't it? To be able to apologise for yourself, but not at the cost of your self-esteem.
All that and a whole lot more. At Sukarnov.
And we're back. What have we got in the fax machine this week, Mr. Donaldson?
We got a message from Gavin from Ohio. Thank you very much, Gavin. And it is the morning where I am, so Ohio to you. Hey, Chris and Pete. I'm not sure if you guys have been asked this before, since I'm fairly new to the Braun Japan cinematic universe, but I've been trying my best to watch these loads of videos and podcasts. I've been missing out in all of these yet. I've been trying to watch all of the videos and podcasts I've been missing out on all these years. Oh, anyways, my question... It's a couple of glasses of Lambrusco last night and a heavy Chinese and eating Chinese for breakfast. Don't do it, kids.
Oh, God.
It will ruin your day.
Disgrace.
My question to you boys today is, when and where is it okay to wear a kimono? My girlfriend and I would love to go to Japan someday and attend a festival and wear them, but I'm very worried if we would get stares or worse, the dreaded label of cultural appropriation. I've watched a few videos on the topic, but none seem to go into the detail on the festival's events and if you would receive backlash for wearing them in the first place. Thanks again, Gavin from Ohio. The Japanese invariably are quite positive about people getting involved in their culture. I think we've spoken about this before, haven't we, about people co-opting stuff like Hello Kitty and Harajuku girls. Apart from the whole kind of Asian young Asian woman as kind of a doll kind of side of things, invariably, I don't think people are that arsed about low culture being used. Kimonos, probably a bit of a different thing. I know there was a big problem with Kim Kardashian making her clothing line. Was it tummy pants or something?
Well, yeah, she remember, I think it was a year ago or two, and Kim Kardashian wants to release a kind of Spanx style underwear thing. I don't know. It was like these tight clothes and called them the kimono brand. And I mean, the whole cultural appropriation thing, I haven't really got many opinions on it, but I felt quite bad about that. And a lot of Japanese women, I think, were disappointed that, you know, if that had gone ahead right, a lot of people don't know what a kimono is outside Japan. And imagine after a few years of Kim Kardashian's kimono brand, growing and being successful like it inevitably would, given that loads of people like her stuff for some reason, people would think, oh, kimono, yeah, it's those underwear that Kim Kardashian sell. It's not, it wouldn't necessarily be associated with this beautiful Japanese silk gown. It would be Kim Kardashian's clothes. So luckily she abandoned that idea, which I think was good. But no, I don't think you've got to worry about wearing a kimono in Japan. I think a lot of places do kind of sell it and let you rent them. For example, in Kyoto, when you walk around, you see a lot of foreign tourists wearing a kimono just because it feels kind of nice. It feels kind of authentic. I've worn them to like festivals and for certain videos. I don't like kimonos for the simple reason that it doesn't look good on me. It doesn't look flattering. My waistline doesn't look good in a kimono. I look like an overweight samurai who's had a bit too much chicken. So I don't normally like wearing them. So, but if you want to kind of have the experience of a kimono without splashing big on the bank, then when you go into a traditional Japanese inn, you get a yukata, right? Which is kind of the same. It's like a cheap kind of kimono. It's like a traditional Japanese bit of clothing, but it's not made of pure silk and it doesn't cost $5,000, which is like what a kimono costs. So that's another point. If you do rent a kimono, don't spill any coffee down it because they're bloody expensive. Like I met someone who spent like 20 grand on their kimono once.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's bonkers. But you should get one. It would go well with your sword.
Well, look, it would complete the picture, wouldn't it? It'd square the pie.
Yeah,
not ideal. Yeah, I'm not going to speak for how Asian people would find somebody adopting their clothing as how offensive they would find it. But from my experience, Japanese people seem broadly positive to anyone getting involved in Japanese culture, and they don't seem to have quite so many problems with it. But again, I'm only speaking from my experience from what I've seen. I've never put one on.
Have
again,
you not?
doesn't suit me. I've worn one of those yukata things, but in a hotel. But again, it's not a good. It just seems a little too loosey goosey. It seems a little bit too if a strong gust blows it up, everyone's going to see your crown jewels. So there you go.
Get a kimono on. Go down the mine. That could be a photo shoot. That'll be a really good photo shoot when you come here. 8K. Get down the mine, wearing a kimono, waving the sword around. It'll be like a post-apocalyptic kind of photo sheet that I'd really get behind.
I love that you've just come from the mine and then now you're doing a podcast. Like, this is, for me, I've just kind of got up. For you, you've been down the mine all day and you've come straight from the mine to do this and you've not had a bath yet. So we're currently speaking to Chris as he's filthed up by a dirty old mine.
Covered in mud, dirt and asbestos. Oh, I can't wait to get in that bath. It's going to be glorious. To be fair, I did think about doing the podcast in the bath, but I think that's a little bit too far, even by my standards.
Sexy. Well, the acoustics wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work.
Acoustics wouldn't work, mate.
We have got a question from Ole. I think it's spelled O-L-E, and they've said good luck with the pronunciation in brackets after it. So, Ole.
Would it be Ole? Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the Manchester United manager?
It would.
He's from that neck of the woods, isn't he? So,
football knowledge, it comes in handy many occasions. Ole says, hello, Chris and Pete. My name is Ole. Good luck with the pronunciation. And I'm a 20-year-old guy from Norway. I'm moving to Tampere in Finland in August to study. And similarly to Japan, the expectations and public perceptions of the country is pretty different than how it actually is to live and go on vacations here. For example, people think Finland's a very grey and boring place with shy people. When in reality, the cities are so vibrant and colourful and the people aren't afraid to stand out with dyed hair and fashion. What are the biggest differences from people's perception of life in Japan to how it actually is? And have you had the same experience with any other country? P.S. You asked in the last episode how to get a katana through customs or an airport. There you go, Pete. This is relevant for you. And my ex's father had a clever and very specific solution to this problem. When living in Korea, he bought a sword made by monks, supposedly, to get it to his home in Norway. He sent it to himself, knowing that the police would confiscate it. But since his brother was a higher up in the Norwegian police force, he just got him to confiscate it and give it to him when he came home. Love you, love your podcasts, Ole. Corrupt Ole.
Jeez. I mean, the system works, doesn't it? How would he locate that particular delivery? That's amazing. Well done, him.
I love that's the solution for getting your sword into your country. Have a family member who's willing to commit corruption in the police force to get it back for you. Fair play to you. That's great, though. That's a good question, though. Biggest difference from people's perception of life in Japan to how it actually is. Any thoughts on that, Pete? You've been here 200 times. How is it different to what you think it is?
It's a tech thing, isn't it? Like, people are obsessed with the tech being very future forward, future facing. But when you get there, it's like, this is a bit backwards. It's just a lot of forms to fill out. And, you know, you might see the odd robot at the front of a shop. But yeah, they seem very obsessed. I think the thing that I think they were. I didn't sort of understand the boozing culture. I didn't understand the hedonistic side of things. I thought I've had them down as quite hard working, but I didn't realize how hard and how into stuff they were. You know what I mean? You go out on a night out and people are into reggae or rap or rock music or punk or, I don't know, the cha-cha slide. But you can't be just into the cha-cha slide. You've got to be properly into the cha-cha slide. You've got to know everything about the cha-cha slide. It's weird. I love it.
So obsession with things, right?
Yeah. I love that.
The tech thing. You know how bad it is when you arrive at Narita Airport for the first time and the immigration form is never ending. You've got to fill out five different documents. I remember when I went to, I think, Canada, I just scanned my passport and a magical door opened. I was in Canada, in Montreal, seeing my family. It was magic. No forms there. So yeah, I guess that's one thing. And the architecture. I think the architecture, I was talking to someone today about the architecture in Japan and I realized that it's really not that nice, most Japanese towns or cities. The image I had is the beautiful sort of Kawada roof tile houses, right? You know, the iconic Japanese buildings have these beautiful roof tiles on houses and castles and whatnot. They're becoming rarer and rarer. I think only 50% of houses have them these days. Most houses are these kind of tacky balsa wood designs that are really cheap and rubbish and they're bulldozed after 20, 30 years. And just a lot of cities here look really quite ugly, especially in a bad day when it's raining like it is today. So, I'd say, architecturally, outside of big cities like Tokyo with the shiny skyscrapers and whatnot, a lot of towns in Japan look the same. and they do look a bit bland, and that's quite unfortunate. Unless you go to somewhere historic like Kyoto or Kanazawa, cities that have sort of a historical bit. But even then, like those cities have like historical quarters. Most of those cities are kind of just like, you know, bland apartment blocks and whatnot. It's a real shame. I just feel like it's all a bit utilitarian, right? Let's just make the apartment block that we can for the cheapest amount of money and whatnot and not care. You might argue that it's to do with earthquakes, but I don't think it's that a lot of the time. You can still make a relatively nice looking building that's earthquake proof. I think it's just the way it is. You know, people don't want to spend big on architecture here, and that's unfortunate. Mm. So yeah, it's not as nice as you think it is architecturally. Would you agree with that, or am I wrong?
I would agree with that. It's quite samey, and I think the Japanese authorities, I don't know why this is, but they're very happy to just bulldoze and break down and build up. They have very little sentimentality. We sort of grade 2 list a building if it was like 80 years old or something. So, oh, well, it's been there for ages, so we'll keep that around. And there's certain protections. But I think for the Japanese, I mean, you look at like there was a river flowing through Shibuya at one point, and they just went, nah, let's just put a department store over the top of it. And so this kind of like river has been kind of coursed underground. It's now like half a sewer, half a river. It's very unlovable looking, but it's just a thing you see in a side street. It's very, very weird, very strange. But that happens all around Japan. They just tear stuff down. They don't give a toss about what's replacing it, and something, the soul of the city, you lose it a little bit. I think it's fair.
The only thing that makes up for it is the scenery itself is very, very stunning. The rice fields, the mountains, the rivers. Mm. Like Japan is a very beautiful scenic country, and that makes up for it. Honestly, that does make up for it. But I travel so much around this country, and so many of the towns just look the same. There's no real sense of identity to them all. They've all got the same Aeon shopping mall. They've all got hundreds of convenience stores. There's not as much unique identity, unfortunately. Going back to what you just said about Shibuya and the river, that a lot of that happened. Like, apparently, Tokyo was like the Venice of Asia. It was seen as like this Venice of Asia at one point. But then in the 1960s, in the run-up to the 1964 Olympics, they completely concreted over like the entire city and got rid of all these little rivers and canals and just concreted over. And you can still see little kind of streams where they used to be flowing down the back alleys of places like Shibuya. But it's unfortunate. They completely got rid of it because they needed to sort of build this infrastructure really quickly. And they didn't care about preserving history. They just wanted to roll out the highway as quick as they could. So it's a shame, really. In an alternate universe, there's a Tokyo that is still the Venice of Asia.
Have a punt down it. You never see sort of any vessels going down those little rivers, because I guess there's not enough water in there anymore, but very strange.
Next time you come over, you can make it happen. Pete's punting tours down Shibuya, down the streams of Shibuya. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back to do it all over again on Wednesday. But for now, guys, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have a good week. Enjoy the first few days of the week, and we'll see you on Wednesday. Have a good one.
I'm off to buy a jet ski.
Of course you are.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.